Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Email Design Podcast, where we talk about the latest trends in email design and development. We are your hosts for the program. I am Kevin Mandeville.
And I am Jason Rodriguez.
And Jason, let's kick it off talking about some typography in email today.
Yeah, lots of typographic stuff we're going to talk about. The first thing is this fantastic report from Anna Yeaman over at Style Campaign called Typographic Patterns in Email. So this is a little bit old at this point. It came out maybe a year ago. I think it was back in 2015. But it's this fantastic, really fascinating study of typography in email. So it's not a massive study. She basically went through 50 emails that were sent between November 2014 and January 2015 and looked at a whole bunch of things. What typefaces were used, the breakdown between things like serif and sans serif, the type sizes used, all of these nitty-gritty details of typography in email campaigns, with some fairly interesting results too. I don't think it's anything too surprising because we all see a lot of emails that look similar to the examples that she looked at here. But there were some interesting results in there. When we're breaking down things like serif versus sans serif typefaces, Anna found out that 74% of those emails used sans serif faces for their primary heading, and 64% used sans serif for their body copy versus that 36% using serif. So I think that's a part of a wider trend we've seen in the web world and just design in general, is that sans serif is used for headings a lot, versus serif for body copy, because it tends to be a little bit more readable. But I think there is a little bit of a shift. We're seeing more people using sans serif typefaces for body copy as well. She noted another study that kind of came to the same conclusion too, where the web was, there was a surge in body copy that was using sans serif versus serif typefaces. But it's similar breakdown when it comes to email too. I think one of the more interesting things was the actual font sizes used in email campaigns. So it was interesting to see that she actually broke down between like desktop, more of like a medium tablet type size, and then smaller phone screens, and found out that on both the desktop and the mobile versions of emails, 16 pixels was the most popular body copy font size, which is good to see. It's a good kind of baseline size for your type in an email. It's readable. You're not going to run into any issues like iOS automatically bumping up sizes below 14 pixels. But I think it was pretty interesting that it was the same on both mobile and desktop. So it doesn't seem to be like a lot of people are taking advantage of media queries right now to change or update that font size for the body copy between desktop and mobile email campaigns. But it looked like, I think it was 28% did change. And out of those 28% of people that were adjusting those font sizes between those different device sizes, 64% actually made that smaller on mobile devices, whereas 36% made it larger and in theory more readable. So I thought that was pretty interesting too. And she goes in really in depth into, you know, line size, how many characters per line, line height. It kind of came down to the baseline of using that 1.5 times the size of body copy for your line height, which seems to be a sort of general rule, and most people follow that. So if you're talking about 16 pixel font size for the body, then you'd have a 24 pixel line height, and that seemed pretty standard across most of these emails. You know, it's no surprise that body font color, pure black was very popular at 20% of emails using that. Dark grays were used widely as well, so that's nice that people are keeping things that kind of contrast and accessibility in mind, keeping things readable there. But I think my favorite part of this study is that she actually created this massive Google Doc with all of the results that you can pick through, see exactly what these different campaigns are using. But more importantly, there's this tab in the Google Doc of all these resources. So there's just dozens of resources, this reading about how to make your emails and your web pages more readable, use better typography, tons of resources there that are definitely worth checking out. So it's a fascinating study that was really interesting to dig into.
Yeah, and I think it's still relevant to today's emails, right? I don't think
absolutely.
It's going to be a magical trend overnight, which is why we wanted to cover this. It was one of those things that we felt this was pretty evergreen, and we had the hiatus with the podcast and have just been waiting for a good time to talk about this, and it's a good time right now. Yeah, I think it's maybe nothing that jumps out of you as being surprising, but it's sort of, it makes sense, and it's sort of a good reinforcement. The thing, looking at serif versus sans serif, I think it is interesting. Maybe, you know, there's emails typically aren't as long form as websites can be, so you see a little bit less serif in email, which might be better for longer pieces of copy of text, which are interesting. I thought it was interesting too, taking a look at what's actually being resized, right? And how there isn't a lot of resizing going on, whether you're going down to mobile or up to desktop, however you have it set up. I would definitely would have expected to see more resizing on the font size going from, you know, from either environment, depending on how your media queries are set up, to either make it bigger on desktop or smaller on mobile, perhaps. I definitely think resizing line height makes a lot more sense. I know sometimes if you're resizing, you may not need to resize, you know, just basic body copy, but the spacing, the white spacing, right, is different in the environment. So that was definitely interesting. Yeah, being able to just take a look at the doc and see everything that's going on, very, very helpful. I would say, please don't use an all black hexadecimal color for lighten that up a little bit. It makes it more readable.
It's nice for headings if you want that kind of added hierarchy and that contrast, but yeah, a little bit softer colors isn't a bad idea for body copy.
Yeah, and so that's great. Props to Style Campaign for putting this together, and over at Style Campaign, be sure to read the full study. Very, very relevant, interesting stuff. We want to continue talking about more research that she did over with web font support in email. So this again was something that she posted a little bit earlier in the year, in 2015, but it's still relevant today. And this is talking about all the different approaches you can use to implement web fonts in email and the various support that those methodologies have. And she has a great support table here in the article that breaks it all down for some of the core email clients. And she took a look at basically the three key methods, taking a look at the at font face methodology, the at import function, and the just using an external style sheet using the link tag, and the differences between those. And what's actually interesting is when you take a look at it from a broad perspective, there's not a whole ton of variation between the support for everything, especially when you take into account the market share for the different email clients. So it was very, very negligible. Taking a look at what is supported where, especially between at import and link. But when you think about, you know, WebKit especially has about 50% of the market share today. The support for that is great for whichever method you use. And one thing I never really noticed, Jason, until I dug into this support chart here, you can pretty much have the majority of email clients support web fonts. You just need to double up. You need to be able to use the at font face and everything in the head and an external link tags linked out to a style sheet reference as well. You need to double up because some don't support it everywhere. But I mean, people forget that old Outlooks 2000 and 2003, they run off Internet Explorer. So does Lotus Notes. You can use the EOT type tag to get support for those clients. WAF 2, not supported well, but WAF is supported pretty well amongst all the clients. So using that for font face. And then, you know, at import in the link tag, they have very, very similar support. The only interesting standout was AOL Internet Explorer 11. You need to use fonts in the head, so using the font face property. But everything else, once you look at it, pretty much has great support. Mailbox, we don't have to worry about, which is one of the ones that wasn't playing nicely with the external link approach. But the only one that's left is sort of the Samsung family that holds out a little bit, which we don't even necessarily need to worry about the note because that's going down the tubes now.
Yeah. Jason.
That might not be an issue to worry about too much longer. So it's interesting. I mean, you can really sort of pick which format you like or just use all of them and get sort of the broad support everywhere for the most part.
Yeah, I really like, she noted that going forward, they're pretty much relying only on the link way of importing fonts, because that does have you know, really wide support. It doesn't have mailbox support, but we don't have to worry about that again. So if you don't want that kind of code redundancy, then that seems to be Style Campaign's recommendation, is using the link option for getting your fonts to work in there. But I really like this. I think this goes to show that, you know, we aren't beholden to the old fallbacks of like Arial and Georgia for all of our typefaces in email. You can safely use web fonts and feel comfortable them working most places. And just kind of understanding that there are a couple of edge cases where you might have to have good fallback fonts, which is awesome. So hopefully this, seeing something like this, I think it's reassuring to me, and hopefully to others, that we can kind of push our email designs a little bit further with typography and make them look that much better.
Yeah, you're still not going to get support for Outlook 2007 to 2016, yep. Kind of the one big holdout. If you're using the at font face property, you're going to want to wrap that in an empty media query.
Yep.
To avoid sort of Times New Roman fallback in the Outlook clients. But yeah, I think moving and transitioning to using link tag is definitely viable, right? It could decrease the amount of code you have in the head of your email. And as we're seeing with things like Gmail, where you need to start sort of minifying your CSS a little bit more, a move to something like that becomes more and more viable.
Yeah, absolutely. But it should, I feel like that's one of the key things about using the link. As she notes, they use it for when they're using Google Fonts, because Google Fonts kind of dynamically serves what's needed based on that link and linking out to that CSS file. So if you're self-hosting and stuff, you might still need to rely on that at font face property and import them that way. But yeah, this is an awesome, awesome support chart. So definitely check that out if you are looking to include web fonts in your emails.
And just
we're gonna get back into it.
More quick thing, Jason. Just theorizing, but maybe possibly if and when Gmail does actually support web fonts, the first way that they might actually support it is through Google Fonts, potentially. So
yeah, that seems to make sense. Yeah,
it seems to make sense. You know, maybe they don't support every type of web font, but they may support like their own link, you know, font CSS. So that might be a good future forward thinking way to approach web fonts, is use Google Fonts, and maybe that'll be supported by Gmail soon enough, and you can get support there as well. So.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll definitely keep an eye on that. You know, Gmail's making tons of updates recently, it seems like. So we're always keeping an eye on that and see how they're going to implement web fonts. Hopefully soon. We'll see what happens. All right, we're going to take a quick break and remind everybody to check out all of our podcast episodes at emaildesignpodcast.com. We have all of our previous episodes, the show notes, links out to everything that we talk about through an episode. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube, where we post all of our episodes. And you can follow along on Twitter with the hashtag emaildesignpodcast. If you want to test your own emails, then we are offering a free trial of Litmus and all the goodness contained there, email previews, analytics, all that good stuff. Just go to litmus.com/giftcard and use the coupon code podcast, and you will get a 14-day free trial of Litmus, and hopefully use those tools to make your emails look great in all those different email clients, test out those web fonts that you're hopefully using now. But yeah, just definitely check out Litmus and check out emaildesignpodcast.com to catch up on all of our news. Moving into something beyond typography, it'd be kind of fun to do an all type focused episode one of these days, Kevin. We might have to start breaking down topics like that. Would be pretty fun podcast episodes. But that's not today. We're going to talk about image carousels for email. So Justin Kua, who runs Fresh Inbox, actually created this awesome tool for creating your own image carousels that works in email. So it's very much in the vein of something like the Bulletproof Button Generator or Backgrounds Generator on Campaign Monitor. So it's a really easy to use tool where you can go in, describe what links you want in this image carousel, upload those files, denote what kind of image width and heights you're using, all of that, and then it spits out the CSS and the HTML to actually get a working image carousel in your email. So it uses the checkbox hack, which we're hopefully all familiar with now, to get that kind of interactivity working. But for anybody that's not familiar with that, or like building an image carousel from scratch, this is clearly the way to go if you want to use that in your own email campaigns. And it's an awesome, awesome tool from Justin.
Yeah, it has pretty good support in the clients, right? It's going to work in iOS, Android, Apple Mail, Yahoo Mail. With the Gmail rendering update, this isn't necessarily going to work everywhere in Gmail, mm-hmm. but under the old Gmail rendering, it even worked there on the webmail for gmail.com addresses. But it even has support in AOL and Outlook 2003. What's nice, though, is that this does have a nice fallback. So if it doesn't support sort of the checkbox hack and the check pseudo selector, mm-hmm. it just falls back to nice static images for those clients. So things like yep. Outlook 2007 and 2016, Outlook.com, Gmail app, what is now known as G Suite back then. So, but I mean, this is a great way, Jason, for people who aren't familiar with interactive email, and maybe it's a bit daunting, and certainly when you take a look at the code for this can certainly be a little bit unapproachable if you're a little bit less technical and not as yep. familiar with the checkbox hack. This is just a great generator for you to just input the assets and it'll do the rest of the work for you. And this can be sort of a great, easy way for people to get involved in their first interactive email.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a good base to build on, too. If you are familiar with code, it's still a nice starting point. You can go and update the CSS and all of your styling stuff to fit your design a little bit better. But yeah, it definitely handles the heavy lifting when you're actually building an image carousel. So check that out. It's over on freshinbox.com. Again, we'll add it in the show notes for this podcast episode, and you can check it out there.
Yeah, and you could probably even update it a little bit more for some of the Gmail rendering update. That'd be a fun little project. So with the Gmail update and thinking about all the cool things we can do in email and layouts now, possibly, Jason, I wanted to talk about another old article that Remy Parmentier wrote about Flexbox in email. And mm-hmm. Again, this feels like sort of we're grabbing up some old resources today, but they're all still relevant here. And Remy wanted to know what's the actual support for Flexbox look like in an email? And for those of you who aren't familiar, Flexbox is sort of the newer approach to lay out your content in CSS. A lot of web designers and developers are already moving on to CSS Grid now, but mm-hmm. Flexbox is supported by like 99% of browsers now and is sort of the de facto way. Instead of using floats and all that stuff, Flexbox is the best way to order it. And when taking a look at Flexbox, one of the things to note is that you do need to sort of have vendor prefixes when you're using it. Mm-hmm. So you would have to, you know, the typical property is to use display flex, but you also need to put display dash webkit dash flex or dash ms dash flexbox to make it work in WebKit and Internet Explorer, which is an important point to note here as we take a look at the support. And so the ones that do sort of support this out of the box are not popular email clients from a global market share perspective. It's supported by Orange, SFR, Free, Zimbra, AOL. But when you take a look at the big players, it's not supported in Yahoo, Gmail, or Outlook.com. Mm-hmm. Yahoo, they just downright removed the display flex property. Gmail and Outlook.com, interestingly enough, they remove all properties related to Flexbox except for display flex, which does not give you the intended desire that
yeah.
that you wanted to at all. So when you're trying to flex wrap things, it all just displays in one line. Interestingly enough, back to that vendor prefix point, you can actually use the dash MS prefix and it'll work in Internet Explorer. So if you use Outlook.com and open that up in Internet Explorer 10 or 11, you can actually see Flexbox support in an email client, which I think is the first time ever, maybe apart from, you know, the Outlook for Mac desktops, that Outlook has like a clear, like progressively enhanced version over any other email client, which is pretty funny. So you can take a look at his test that he did. And then just one interesting point to note is that Flexbox, it does have support. I mean, that took a look at Flexbox, you know, in webmails, but it does have pretty good support in Apple Mail, Android Native Mail, Thunderbird. And so you might be able to actually use Flexbox layout as an enhancement today using the @support CSS function. So again, if you want to target those specific email clients, so you could target, say, iOS 10 with the hack we went over, the recent podcast, Jason, things like that. You could possibly use it to target that and use Flexbox as a progressively enhanced way to manage layout. That'd be a bit of a of a hack and a lot of work maybe for not necessarily a large gain, but yeah. It was interesting to see how Flexbox sort of behaves in email at the moment.
Yeah, I really like that there are people testing this stuff out, you know. It's definitely, it's not widely supported. I doubt anybody's going to start using Flexbox in their emails right now. But I like that people are thinking ahead to the future, and the web's very, I wouldn't say quickly, but people are eager to move on from the traditional layout model of using floats and clears and all of that, you know. So people are looking at things like Flexbox and CSS grid layout, and that's definitely the future of layout on the web. So it's nice to think that there are people are thinking about the future when it comes to email as well. I think it's going to take a lot longer time for us to get anywhere near good Flexbox or CSS grid support, but hopefully we'll start getting there at some point. You know, we've seen massive updates in the last few months with responsive stuff, especially with Gmail supporting media queries and embedded styles. So hopefully that's a sign of what's to come too. We're going to see these clients improving and hopefully better options for us managing our layouts and our email campaigns, which would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Another conversation for another day, but I'm pretty jazzed about CSS grid myself. I would be perfectly okay if email just skipped over Flexbox and just went to CSS grid. That'd be pretty funny, actually.
If
email was so good that we just bypassed an inferior language that ended up like being on the web for like a matter of 3 years or whatever.
Yeah, CSS grid's not implemented anywhere yet. Firefox Nightly is the only thing that you can actually see it out in the wild. But yeah, it looks super interesting, and I'd love to see better layout options, both for the web and email.
It's still in spec though, so that's promising to see. But nothing official. You still got to use processors of some kind to spit out valid code. Mm-hmm. One item that we never did get to talking about, and we just want to make sure we noted this and gave props to the team over at AOL for actually making Alto Mail responsive. So when it initially had launched, it was not responsive. They were actually very receptive to feedback around making it responsive, and it only took them a few months to add that support. So props to them. AOL Alto Mail is now responsive. So again, this isn't news per se, but we never went over it on the podcast, and that is definitely helping contribute to, you know, around 75% of the market share supporting responsive email. So that's important. And one item I did want to point out, Mark Robbins found out that you can actually target Alto Mail. Alto Mail prefixes all of their classes with an AOL Mail underscore class. So you can essentially use a little targeting if you just do the universal selector and then an attribute selector in that CSS, giving it a class with sort of the arrow caret up key, which is just a way to say for any class that begins with this, so basically any class that begins with the class of AOL mail underscore, and then add whatever your class for an individual element that you're trying to target after that. That is a method of targeting anything on AOL Alto Mail app and its rendering. Although I'm not sure of any massive quirks for it. Mark does a ton of interactive email, so he clearly needs to target as many things as possible. But it's a tool there for you if you need it, if you need to test an AOL Alto Mail and ever need to test in that. So that was just great news overall, Jason.
Yeah, definitely. I love when email client vendors are really receptive to improving their engines and stuff. And I think AOL has done a great job with Alto Mail so far. So hopefully they keep up with the trend and others kind of jump on the bandwagon too and make their email clients better. That brings us to our last segment of the podcast, our email of the week. I feel like this is like the catch-up podcast because these are all things that are a little bit older. This email campaign's a little bit older, but it's freaking awesome, so it's worth talking about. This one is from Taco Bell. Who doesn't love Taco Bell, honestly? I get a good quesadilla there.
I have a confession, Jason. True, this is real life.
You've never had Taco Bell.
I have never had Taco Bell in my life, and that may be shocking, since you know how
that's shocking. But knowing you, as I know you, Kevin, that's not too shocking, really, based on your eating habits. But yeah, most people love Taco Bell. I think you would agree that you love their emails, especially this example here.
I'm sure it's great. I've honestly never been like near a Taco Bell in my area. I've just never been. Yeah,
weird.
I need to do. Somebody needs to take me to Taco Bell.
We'll have to hunt one down when I'm out there next time. Yeah. All right, but this Taco Bell email is it's this like scrolling adventure. I feel like a lot of people may have seen this. It kind of made the rounds on Twitter, got tons of buzz. There's a great blog post over in the Litmus community kind of breaking down the techniques behind this. But you kick off the email and you essentially follow the adventures of three little pixel art characters, which I love pixel art, and they do it really, really well. So it follows them throughout their morning. There's one guy that gets this Taco Bell breakfast. There's a woman that doesn't have anything to eat. And then there's another guy that gets some generic fast food breakfast and follows them throughout their mornings. And it kind of shows their trials and tribulations. And obviously the Taco Bell breakfast eater has a great morning and falls in love, it looks like. But it features this really cool mechanism where when you scroll, the characters stay stationary, they're fixed, but the environments they go through are what's scrolling. And it uses Z-index and then position fixed on the characters. They have this really nice scrolling kind of animation feel to it, this kind of parallax feel to the email when you're scrolling. So this, I think, is just a kind of genius use of this technique. But it should be noted, this is something that doesn't really work anywhere anymore. Apple Mail recently updated so that it doesn't support position fixed, which was kind of the last holdout doing that. So while this worked like really well when it was released, since then, this isn't really a technique you can pull off that easily.
Boo. Come on, Apple Mail, get this fixed. Add in support for position fixed. Yeah, I mean, this is just a fun email, right? I mean, yeah, I think this really hits their target audience too, for people who would be interested in Taco Bell. Mm-hmm. Really fun. The pixel art is great and fantastic. From a implementation standpoint, it's just really smart with how it uses the different layers in the Z index and yep. positioning fixed to sort of create this whole journey. Not the most bulletproof email design. It was broken in some email clients, but I'll give it a pass to say that they wanted to do something more experimental. And
yep.
I would go out on a limb and say Taco Bell probably has a pretty heavy mobile audience anyways, yeah. which is where this would have been supported. And that's who they were trying to target. But at any rate, I just love being able to sort of push. Again, this pushes the edge of what you typically see in an email. And that's why I loved it. And we can appreciate it for its time, even though it is no longer possible to do anymore at the moment anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that it's a big brand, you know, pushing the envelope. It's not. We see a lot of like smaller brands, smaller senders kind of doing interesting experiments, but I feel like it's somewhat rare to see such a big brand and kind of a widely recognized name like Taco Bell doing something this creative. So it's always good to see out in the wild.
All right, yeah. So I'm going to have to go grab a breakfast sometime or something then.
Yeah. Get a chicken quesadilla. They're delicious. You'll love them.
Chicken quesadilla? I can do that. I can roll
it's
with
cheese
that.
And chicken, Kevin.
Yeah.
You can eat those two things.
Exactly. Yeah. pollo y queso y nunca más.
There you go.
Solamente pollo y queso. All right. That's going to do it for this edition of the Email Design Podcast. Like Jason said, emaildesignpodcast.com. Everything we talk about here on the podcast today, it'll be right there. So all the show notes and links. And hey, check out every single episode of the podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, and YouTube. So get the podcast wherever it may be that you regularly listen to podcasts. Tweet along with the hashtag Email Design Podcast and just hit up litmus.com/gift card. And input the coupon code podcast for a 14-day free trial of Litmus. All right, until next time, email geeks, keep your table cells aligned, your styles in line, and get some Taco Bell, I guess.